live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Definitely one of the best sports weekends of the entire year. And this one lived up to the hype. In fact, it smashed it. Four games. Each one had something that blew your mind. And even if the first three did not do it for you, then the last one, Philadelphia at Chicago, had to. I mean, we can get right down to it. You could have missed the first three games and even the first 59 minutes of Eagles-Bears and still had yourself an amazing sports weekend, because the final minute of that game last night really was that good. Philly down 15-10, fourth down, ball on the Bears' two-yard line, 56 seconds left. Go ahead and roll it.
Three-man rush. Rolls out of the pocket. Sidearm throw. Caught. Goal line. Touchdown, Golden Tate. Got inside the hash mark, and Philadelphia has scored. The Eagles have scored and taken the lead with 56 seconds to play. A two-yard touchdown pass to Golden Tate on the sidearm delivery by the Super Bowl MVP, Nick Foles.
Thanks to Westwood One. Now, I thought I did a pretty good job of setting that up, except I left out one key detail. One key detail before we rolled that. The key detail being Nick Foles was your quarterback. And if Nick Foles is the quarterback in a critical moment in a playoff game, then you already know how that's going to end. Of course, that was going to be a TD, because that's what Nick Foles does. He goes from good quarterback to unreal in pressure moments. It's one of the freakiest things ever, and it's also one of the most predictable things ever. I mean, it doesn't matter that this guy's going up against the best defense in the NFL. It doesn't matter what he had done until that point. It doesn't matter that he's throwing to a wide receiver who's only been with that team for half the season. And yes, the already tired thing to say right now is that Golden Tate trade paid for itself on that play. Except that trade paid for itself on that play. Except then again, Nick Foles could have had me on the field instead of Golden Tate, and he still would have found a way to score. It was always going to be a touchdown. Let me say it again. That's because that's what Nick Foles does. Before that ball was snapped on fourth down, the only question was, would Chicago be attempting a field goal to tie the game or to win it? And after a long replay review, one of many over the weekend, the answer was for the win. And after a huge 35-yard return on the kick, Mitchell Trubisky threw an incomplete pass on first down, and then this on second down.
On pretty much a windless night, second down and 10. Trubisky hangs in the pocket, throws, and it's going to be caught by Allen Robinson. Tremendous night for him.
It was a tremendous night for him. In fact, for both of them. That was NBC. There are dimes, and then there's that. As perfect a pass as you can throw in that situation. Clutch, really clutch. And then the Bears are within field goal range. Soldier Field going insane. And then it only got better because an 8-yard pass to Robinson on the next play got them even closer. After a spike and an incomplete pass, it was all right there for Cody Parkey. All right there for him to win that game for the Bears. Now, I could introduce the clip, but you already know the clip, so let me just go ahead and roll it.
Holding will be the punter, O'Donnell. Far hash on the grass for the lead. Ball put down. Right-footed kick is up, end over end. And now he hit the crossbar. After he hit the upright again. He's done it all season long.
Yeah, just not a single doink, but a double doink. I didn't know that was even possible. But if anybody can do it, it would be Parkey, who had 4-1 game earlier this season, and he had another one last week. Run that back again, and this time, if you're near a TV, check out the Bears mascot behind the goalpost.
For the lead, ball put down, right-footed kick is up, end over end, and now he hit the crossbar! After he hit the upright again! He's done it all season long!
Staley DeBear. Wilts like an inflatable that just got stuck with a pin. Hell, the entire stadium had all the air sucked right out of it. I have never seen that much shock all at once. The reaction shots on the Bears sideline is like something from a Renaissance painting. Even the Eagle players were stunned. And the fans, jaws slamming into seats, because that stadium just endured the biggest buzzkill and the biggest record scratch ever, with the worst sound ever. Doink.
And now we hit the crossbar.
Doink. And then it's followed by this sound as Parkey left the field at the end of the game. You knew that was coming. You knew the second that ball did not get over the crossbar that that was the reaction you were going to get. Just like you knew that degenerates were going to hop on Twitter and send some of the most vile, despicable crap at the kicker. Look, I get it. I understand it. You're angry that your team lost. But if you feel the need to thumb out a bunch of garbage at another human being that you've never even met, you're the loser, not Parkey. Parkey's not the reason your life did not turn out the way you had hoped. You are. I mean, I'd love to sit here and tell you that nobody felt worse about that double doink than the kicker himself, but that's actually not true. Plenty of you losers actually felt way worse than he did. How else would you explain all the utter garbage that you were thumbing out to this guy? Trust me, he felt like crap. But unlike some of you, he handled his with complete class and dignity.
I struck a good ball there, and unfortunately, I mean, I can't make this up. I hit the post, what, six times this year, and I hit it twice on that one. You can't make this up. I mean, I feel terrible. Let the team down. That's on me. So I have to own it. I have to be a man, and, you know, it's unfortunately, that's the way it went today.
Again, I wish I could say that all the fans handled that as well as he did, but I can't. Look, Bears fan, don't turn this guy into the new Steve Bartman. It's not right. In fact, it's all wrong. And let me give you some reasons why. Number one, it looked like Eagles defensive lineman Trayvon Hester may have gotten a hand on it. Number two, it's not like the offense was exactly killing it in the red zone. They had a total of one TD the entire game. Number three, let's not forget, the Bears had the best defense in the NFL, and they allowed a 12-play, 80-yard TD drive with the season on the line. So yes, his conversation is completely different if he makes that kick. Then he's a legend and probably never has to buy another drink in Chicago for the rest of his life. And while he will get most of the blame, there were lots of other guys in Bears gear who could have stepped up earlier but didn't. But now everybody wants Parkey to wear it. He gets to wear the tweets, the boos, and the creeps who are saying things like they don't feel sorry for him because of how much money he makes. I mean, you think this guy wouldn't immediately write a check for this year's salary just to have that pick or that kick back? I guarantee he would. Look, I'm not saying that you've got to hype this guy for trying really hard. I'm not saying you have to cheer this guy off the field. The guy did have a job to do. He didn't get it done. I'm not even saying that you shouldn't be pissed. I'm saying don't reach for your phone or your laptop so you can knock out some obscene tweet about a waste of life. What a waste of life this guy is, when the only reason that you're really going to do it is because you hate your own life. Yeah, the guy was on a losing team, but some of you have a losing life. In the meantime, go ahead and tip your hat to Philly for doing what Philly does and what Nick Foles does, clutching the hell up and finding a way to survive and advance. And I'm not singling out or saying it's all of you Bear fans. Far from it. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying the ones who deserve it. You know who you are. You're better than that, or at least I thought you were. Check this out. TurboTax Live is a new way to do taxes. It combines tech with on-demand tax pros who can answer your questions and offer personalized advice. Real CPAs and EAs can help you with your return and find all the deductions that apply to you. Their tax experts are there when you need them so you can file with complete peace of mind. TurboTax Live's on-demand CPAs and EAs can not only answer your questions and offer advice, they can even review your return with you, going over it line by line, so you can feel confident that you're getting the maximum refund. You've got real tax questions, so TurboTax Live has real tax professionals who can answer them for you. They have CPAs and EAs who are on demand, ready to give you advice and answer questions as you go. Their tax pros get to know you so they can offer personalized suggestions and find all the deductions that you deserve. Whether you're stuck on a specific question or need guidance working through your return, their tax experts can give you the confidence to ensure your return is done correctly. TurboTax Live with CPAs and EAs on demand. See details at TurboTax.com. Charles Robinson is my guest. Charles, good morning. What's up? How are you?
So, bro, how you doing, man?
Great. Perfect. Awesome. Great to have you on. Let me jump right into it. So you were in Arlington for the Seahawks-Cowboys game, and we're only a couple of months removed from the Cowboys being 3-5, and there being all that legitimate talk, finally, that Jason Garrett's job was in jeopardy, but Jerry Jones did not fire him then. How much vindication was there for Jones on Saturday?
I mean, he's feeling it. There's no doubt. I mean, I asked him, do you feel vindication for yourself and then also obviously for Jason Garrett? And he unequivocally said yes. You know, I've probably tried to fire Jason like four times the last couple of years. So, and I know I'm not alone. And Jerry has sort of gone through that flogging almost on a weekly basis the last couple of seasons with Jason Garrett. And I thought Jerry made an interesting point. He said, you know, and I like the way he put it. He basically said, Jason has learned a lot of lessons on our dimes. And I was like, wow, okay, you're going to bring up the fact that you paid this guy for, you know, a lack of postseason success. And Jerry basically said, look, you know, we'd like to use that now. We've spent all this money essentially getting this guy to the point where we feel like, you know, he's a pretty seasoned coach. Meanwhile, the rest of the NFL, he called it the hunt for Red October. You've got eight, you know, franchises out here trying to find a head coach. We've got a guy that we feel like, you know, we feel pretty good with, and we got a quarterback who's, you know, slowly progressing under him. But really, you're bringing on Jalen Smith. Like, this defense is sick, and I frankly think there could be an argument made that through the rest of these playoffs, this might be the best defense that's still on the board.
Charles Robinson joining us. All right, so go back to the quarterback for a minute, because after the game, Ezekiel Elliott said that Dak Prescott had back-to-back weeks of playing, quote, like a grown-ass man. Now, Prescott, of course, had that special rookie season. He then had a rough second year. He got off to a slow start this year. So where is he right now as a quarterback?
Look, he's getting better. I think it's, you know, it's marginal. He's not taking these big leaps forward. However, you know, if you go back and you look at when they acquire Amari Cooper from the Raiders, that's really when this offense started to open up, because it took a number of pieces that I think were really second tier pieces in terms of the skill positions, and it bumps them all down, and it gives Amari Cooper someone to balance out Zeke. Everybody knows that, look, you can run the ball 20, 30 times a game. You can even throw it to Zeke. But there has to be something else out there that keeps defenses essentially honest, particularly on the back end. Amari Cooper did that. He did that in spite of not being in the passing program, not having all the off-season snaps that typically work in the favor of the chemistry of the quarterback. So I think that's helped Dak a lot to have essentially that extra piece to count on. But I'll say this about Prescott. There's no doubt when you watch him, and I've seen him quite a bit over this season, from a leadership standpoint, he's further where he is developmentally in terms of reading defenses, the accuracy, all these other things. Leadership-wise, there's no doubt. These guys all buy into him. He'll do certain things during games that lift the entire offense, particularly when there's, you know, design runs, the guy's breaking tackles, he's not really sliding, he's playing physical. He has some resilience to him, and I think now you're starting to see the – you know, the reading, the defense, the mechanics, a lot of these other things are slowly catching up. I still think his next big jump is going to be next offseason when he's got Cooper that entire offseason, but definitely positive for Dak.
We were talking to Charles Robinson. You know, when you talk about leadership, I'm sure you'd see all those exact same things about Nick Foles. Now, he was not perfect throughout that game against the Bears, but he did exactly what you'd expect him to do in the clutch. In fact, how do you explain the fact that this guy comes through time and time again in all of those critical moments?
I think he probably knows the Doug Peterson playbook. Like, I think Carson Wentz is the more talented player. I think Foles might be the better fit for Doug Peterson in that offense. Like, he's had years in the Kansas City system. He had some time in the Kansas City system. Obviously, he's had time in Philadelphia, so he knows that Doug Peterson offense, which is basically the Andy Reid offense, better than anyone. And So I think there's a certain comfort level that when he comes into the game, Carson Wentz goes down and he comes in late in the season. Not only does he have that experience from last year, but he knows enough to, I think, call that offense on his own. I think it's funny. We go back to the Philly special clip and people forget that it was Nick Foles who said to Doug Peterson, "Hey, Philly, let's run the Philly special." And Peterson thought about it for a second and said, "Yeah, let's do it." So arguably one of the most famous plays in the history of Philadelphia, it was Nick Foles who called that play. And I think that's part of it. I think that offense, they know when he steps in there, he's going to get everything right, you know, just from a structural standpoint, knowing where everyone's supposed to be. But look at the touch, or look at what the touchdown pass that he throws to Golden Tate, the arm slot. He drops it down. This is the kind of thing that he probably doesn't get a lot of credit for, where physically he is doing some things that set him apart from maybe other quarterbacks in the league. That was a moment where he had to be perfect. He's perfect on it. They obviously win that game. Nick Foles, I think Nick Foles is a fit. Very, very good for the Philadelphia Eagles. And if this guy goes on a run to the Super Bowl again, man, that's going to be an interesting conversation in the offseason.
Charles Robinson joining us. All right, before I let you go, the Chargers, I thought, were really impressive in going back across the country. They took care of their business. They survived. They advanced. They get out with a win. Now they face the Patriots. When you look at this year's version of New England, what is their biggest weakness, and what kind of a shot do you give the Chargers this time?
It's probably New England's, honestly, it's the run defense, but I think what worries me more against Rivers is that although New England is a good pressuring team, sacks and drives, and New England, I think, is like pretty close to, I don't know, I think they had like 30 sacks this season, near the bottom of the NFL in sacks, like 29th, 30th, somewhere around there. You got to get home against Rivers, okay? Like pressure, you can pressure Rivers, but he's at this stage in his career where I don't think pressure alone bothers him. Sacks are going to end drives. And so I think for New England, not just obviously the run defense is a problem. Thankfully, you know, I mean, maybe for New England, the Chargers are a little banged up in the backfield. Melvin Gordon didn't look, you know, the same Melvin Gordon that we've seen down the stretch. But I think, look, again, they got to get home. They got to get Phillip Rivers on the ground. They have to end drives and get off the field. That's the biggest thing for New England. And I would say to anybody who watches the Patriots, when they control tempo and have the ball more than 30 minutes, in other words, you win the time of possession, New England wins games. The way they're going to do that is by actually sacking Phillip Rivers and getting him down.
It's 2019. Are you still doing things the old way at work? New year, new you, right? So start the year off right by replacing that software that causes you angst and agony every single day. You know the one. You can find software that you love that fits your business's needs using Capterra.com. Capterra is the leading free online resource to help you find the best software solution for your business. With over 700,000 reviews of products, from real software users, discover everything you need to make an informed decision. Search more than 700 specific categories of software, everything from project management to email marketing to yoga studio management software and more. As an example, our business continues to grow and expand. We have over 200 affiliates that we have to stay in touch with. Capterra helps me do just that. Visit capterra.com/Rome for free today and find the right tools to make 2019 the year for your business. Capterra.com/Rome. Capterra, that's CAPTERRA.com/Rome. Let me give you my thoughts on the Chargers Ravens first. Yesterday's first game, Chargers-Ravens. That, of course, was a rematch of that Week 16 game. Except this time, things were reversed. Instead of playing in SoCal, that game was in Baltimore. Instead of the Chargers being favored, the Ravens were. Instead of the Ravens pounding the Chargers, it was the Chargers who pounded the Ravens. Instead of Lamar Jackson making the Chargers look foolish, it was the Chargers doing that to Lamar. You see, L.A., remember that loss. L.A. went to school on that loss. L.A. came out with a different approach, a new approach. That new approach was not just showing up with their quarter package, putting seven DBs on the field, and shutting down Jackson. In that first game, the Ravens bullied the Chargers, which probably explained why three Ravens players showed up to yesterday's game wearing masks, with one carrying a baseball bat. Chargers corner Casey Hayward Jr. saw that on social media. He didn't like it. He told SI, quote, "They were trying to come in here like they were bullies." Well, sometimes bullies get hit in the mouth. they can put that mask on and go back out so nobody recognizes them. End quote. They got a word for that. Roasted. That's exactly what the Chargers did. They punched the Ravens in the mouth repeatedly, and they would not stop. Those seven DBs shut down Lamar Jackson. They could cover in the passing game, but they had the speed to lock him down in the run game too. So if you've been focused on the Chargers offense to the point that you've totally forgotten about their defense, you've got to stop that right now. I mean, yes, Phillip Rivers is a stud. The guy's still a monster, especially on the road this year. And so are Melvin Gordon and Keenan Allen. But do not forget about the defense. Melvin Ingram is a beast. That D-line is serious. Their secondary is legit. That defense is for real, and it does travel. They're 8-1 on the road. And they can survive weird-ass games, like yesterday, because that was weird. That was weird now, including that bizarre series down the goal line that looked like a Chargers touchdown, then a Ravens touchdown, and then a Chargers touchdown again. And if for whatever reason you've also been sleeping on Anthony Lynn as a head coach, you got to stop that too. He and D coordinator Gus Bradley pantsed John Harbaugh and the Ravens coaching staff. Damian Square, a Chargers D-end who played nose tackle yesterday, told SI the defense knew what the Ravens were doing, quote, 60 to 70% of the time, end quote. And that's why through the first three quarters, the Ravens had a total of 83 yards, three first downs, and 3 points. And now let's talk for a moment about everybody who was in that stadium yesterday and who was on Twitter yesterday. You know, all the people freaking out and killing Lamar Jackson. Yes, the guy was brutal for the first three quarters. Yes, he had as bad a three quarters as you can possibly have. He's a rookie making his first playoff start, and he looked every bit the part. Hell, at times, he didn't look like a rookie playing in his first playoff game. He looked like a guy playing in his first football game. That bad. But if you want to get bent about him and how he showed up in that playoff game, then you have to remember the Ravens are not in that playoff game without this guy. And remember that he was not surprising anybody in this game. The Chargers saw him a couple of weeks back. The Chargers got that second look at him when nobody else had. They studied him. They schemed for him. They changed their approach. They did. The Ravens didn't. And here's another thing for everybody booing him in the stadium and killing him on Twitter. Everybody who wanted him taken out of that game. For who? For what? Settle down, dopes. You had Joe Flacco on the sideline, not Joe Montana.
Hey!
I tweeted that at the time. I'll say it again right now. It was Joe Flacco on the sideline, not Joe Montana. Let's not forget that Joe Flacco wasn't even Joe Flacco in his first playoff start. You know, the guy you're killing, Lamar, for his first playoff start. Remember Flacco? He went 9 for 23 for 135 yards in his first playoff start. And he was Joe Flacco this season, which is why he lost his starting job and had not played in 2 months. You think that guy was just going to roll off the sideline in the fourth quarter and start dropping dimes? No, but I'll tell you who did. I'll tell you who did do that. The guy who did roll off the sideline in the fourth quarter and start dropping dimes. The guy who did that was this guy.
Ball down the field, and it is caught. That's Crabtree with the touchdown.
That guy, Lamar Jackson. Also, the same guy, this guy.
Jackson, look at that cut. Look at the Ravens down the field, and it's caught by Dixon. Dixon roaming free in the secondary and down to the 10.
Look at this play. Jackson with his best play of the game.
So what I'm saying to you is this guy, Lamar Jackson, damn near led them all the way back in the fourth quarter. Damn near led them all the way back. The guy you were killing, the guy that you wanted benched, damn near led them all the way back. Do that, finish it off, and we're talking about an absolute legend. So of course it was the right decision to keep him in that game. In a game where John Harbaugh got absolutely outcoached by Anthony Lynn, he did make the right call. In that case, it's just that the Chargers were that much better as a team. The Chargers were that much better coached. LA is tough as hell. They made it close in the end, but in January, it's all about survive and advance, and they did both. They got it done. They changed up. The Ravens did not. The Chargers adjusted. The Ravens did not. Anthony Lynn says, we went to school on that first game.
Well, you know, the more times you see that offense, the better you're going to be against it. You know, I used to run that offense. And I remember we started out really fast, 1-4 in a row. But when people got enough tape on us, they could catch up to us. And you know, I think that's what happened today. We saw it enough.
They saw it enough. They got a second shot at that offense nobody else had. So when you haven't seen that offense or you can't emulate or simulate that offense in practice, it's going to cause some problems. And it did. But the Chargers are an extremely well-coached team with Anthony Lynn and Gus Bradley. And they played them about 15 days ago. And they went to school on it. And they fared better. And now going ahead, you know, look, the Ravens know they can't win football games like that. They can't sustain that long term. They're going to have to take the next step with Lamar Jackson. And they will. I still buy into that guy. I don't change anything I said about that guy going into that game. In fact, if anything, it proves my point. This guy was horrible for 3+ quarters. This guy, like I said, never mind playing his first playoff game. He looked like he was playing his first football game. The fans are booing him. Nothing's going right. He's on the big stage, but the guy didn't blink. He didn't panic. He didn't shut down. He didn't say, oh, it's not my day. This guy battled back, played big in the fourth, and literally had the ball in his hands and a chance to win that game in the end. That, more than anything else, tells me about this guy's heart, this guy's grit, and the fact that this guy can win. Harbaugh had a right to leave him in there. He just got outcoached. They got outplayed. They got outclassed. So tip your hat to the Chargers. And now they go to Foxborough. What do they get for their efforts? They win 12 games. They're one of the best teams in the NFL. And what do they get? What's their reward? A trip across the country to Baltimore. Then they go to Baltimore and they beat a team that beat them a couple of weeks before that. What's their reward for that? Another trip across the country. We are joined by Jalen Smith. Jalen, great to have you on. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good, good. Great to talk to you. Listen, you've played on the biggest stage throughout your football career, including your time at Notre Dame and now with the Cowboys. But what's it like being in the playoffs at home and coming out with a win like that? How would you describe that feeling?
Oh, it's a wonderful feeling, man. Any chance that you can get to go out and play this great game that we all love, you have to cherish it. And I'm thankful to be a part of America's team and just representing the right way.
You mentioned America's team. You know, I was talking earlier this season about how the Cleveland Browns were now America's team, but then you get that win last night or the win over the weekend against Seattle. What's it like having that star on your helmet and being a part of America's team?
It's a wonderful feeling. But it's a privilege, not a right, you know, to be able to wear this, you know, this uniform and this star proudly. You know, it's just something that you can carry, you know, throughout the rest of your life. So, like I said, I'm thankful, you know, but we got a lot of work to do still.
Cowboys linebacker Jalen Smith is my guest. You know, you look at that game. It was a monster showing, I thought, by the defense, especially in shutting down Seattle's run game. They came into Saturday with the best rushing offense in the league, and yet you dominated them. So what was your mindset going into the game?
Yeah, the mindset was as simple as that, to you know, be more physical than our opponent and impose our will, stop the run. We were able to do that. You know, we just got to continue that, you know, throughout the next weeks.
Jalen Smith, my guest. You showed up after the game, I thought, with an amazing look, which included three incredible chains, one with your swipe celebration, a hot boys chain from DeMarcus Lawrence, and an emblem from Africa. Can you kind of break down what those symbols mean, each one of those? What was that about?
Yeah, man. Well, you know, as you guys know a little bit about hot boys and what we're about, you know, just a tribe, a unit, you know, much more than teammates. We're brothers. And in order to get the hot boy chain, you have to be voted in as a hot boy for sure. You have to get 2 sacks. So I was able to earn my 2 sacks quite early in the season, so I was able to get my hot boy chain. And then, you know, the swipe is obviously a symbolization of a Queer Eye View and my celebration, something I've been doing since my sophomore year of high school at Bishop Lewis in Fort Wayne, Indiana. So just, you know, a little recognition on that from a branding standpoint. And then Africa, I'm I'm 18% South Africa and 47% from Benin and Togo. So, you know, just being really in tune with, you know, my culture and where I'm from. I was able to visit South Africa my sophomore year at Notre Dame, studying abroad. So that was an amazing experience. But, yeah, I mean, that's just a kind of a representation, a symbolization of, you know, kind of what I rock.
I like it. I like it. Well done. We're talking to Jalen Smith. Now, your front seven is nasty, but in particular, there's that combination of you and Leighton Vander Esch. I don't know how many times I've had former players or analysts on this show this season that have raved about the speed that you guys have and how hard you both hit. What's it like playing alongside him and forming that combination?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great tandem. You know, we've had a chance to build our chemistry for a long time, you know, since he got drafted, you know, learning from each other side by side. And we're able to put, you know, our elite capabilities on display. We feed off of each other. We love one another. So, like I said, we just got to keep it going.
Jalen Smith talking to me for a few more moments. You know, you've got the coaching staff, and they were under a little bit of fire earlier this season, and then you guys turned it all around. I want to ask you about a guy that you play for, a guy that I really admire, always have, Rod Marinelli. Now, Rod's got this award that he gives out, but it's really rare. The award itself is an old neck roll, and you joined Barry Church and J.J. Wilcox as the only Cowboy players ever to earn it. It's the ultimate sign of respect from Rod. What did it mean to you when he gave that to you?
Man, it meant the world to me. You know, people are understanding and being able to see and visualize my, you know, the physical play that I play with, the physicalness, you know, when making tackles and things of that nature. But for the defensive coordinator to acknowledge me with that award is a tremendous honor. It's something I'll carry for the rest of my life.
I mean, Jalen, seeing you fly around right now is one thing, but it's quite another when you consider that brutal, brutal knee injury that you suffered in the Fiesta Bowl. I mean, I understand that you're looking ahead and not looking back, but it would have been really easy to get down after something like that, maybe even start to question yourself, but you rehabbed that injury like a champ. How did you go about approaching that road back, and how lonely a road is that?
Man, a clear-eyed view, focused vision, a determined belief, and earned dreams. That's got me to where I am today. I never played a game again, and, you know, just blessed to have this opportunity. And, you know, the biggest thing I did was embrace each season that I was in. So I'm embracing this season for sure.
Hey, can you explain that really quickly before you go? I've heard you talk about that. I like that a lot, that clear-eyed view. What does that mean to you, having a clear-eyed view?
So a focused vision is, you know, being able to identify what you want to accomplish and being able to see it clearly. And then a determined belief is about, you know, a self-belief, a belief in yourself, a belief in God that he has your back, you know, throughout this process. And then earned dreams is just about how bad do you want it? You know, what work are you willing to put in to accomplish that goal? So a clear-eyed view. I came up with in my sophomore year of college, just, you know, this platform that we're on, what defines me? You know, how can I get out and get people to understand who I am? And, you know, fortunate enough to be able to put that on display. So I believe everyone should have a clear-eyed view, whether you play sports or not.
What do you do? If you're not an athlete, you're not playing the game at a high level, like if it's me or somebody else listening, what's their clear-eyed view? How do we approach it?
It's the same way. It's those three scenarios. It's those three breaking points when you break down the clear-eyed view: a focused vision, a determined belief, and earned dreams.
Cowboys at the Rams coming up on Saturday night. It's a short week, 8:15 p.m. Eastern. Jalen Smith, Cowboys linebacker, joining us. Jalen, really appreciate you and you finding time to come on the show today, man. That was great. Thank you so much.
I appreciate you guys. And you take care, man. Go Cowboys.
As exciting as it was, it's hard to know who had a worse weekend, the refs or the head coaches. I'd actually say the refs, because at least some head coaches had good weekends and made good decisions. But the refs, I mean, damn. Is that really the best that the league can do? Let's be honest. Half those replays of catches and touchdowns are really just them flipping the coin, right? But I'm not here to crack on the refs. I'm not here to do that. I'm here to praise the Cowboys and to crack on the Seahawks. Because as good as the Cowboys were on Saturday, Pete Carroll was that bad. And my beef is not with his wackiness.
Here's this little pop-up kick, and that could not have been any easier. Fielded by Beasley, and that was a gift.
Wasn't much of a chance, was it?
That is hard to explain. It's not as if Dallas didn't have anybody back there. The little drop kick, maybe he got more of it than he expected, but this is the easiest catch in one of the biggest moments for Cole Beasley in his career.
Credit, Fox. That was wacky, but it wasn't whack. Sebastian Janikowski was injured. Onside kicks have been nearly impossible to recover this season. So you got to change things up. I mean, I get that, I guess. I respect it, I guess. But what I don't respect was Seattle's stubbornness when it comes to that run game. Chris Carson, 13 rushes, 20 yards. Mike Davis, 4 rushes, 10 yards. Rashad Penny had that sweet 28-yard run and then promptly lost 7 on the next play. Here's another way of looking at Penny's game. He had 28 yards on that one run. He had 29 for the game total. The Seahawks, as a team, had 24 rushes for 73 yards. So what I'm saying is, maybe at some point, when you're averaging about 3 yards per carry, even less than that if you throw out Penny's big run, maybe you change up and you let Russell Wilson do something other than turn and hand it off. Maybe you look at what the Cowboys are doing and say, damn, that front seven is legit. Guys like Jalen Smith and Leighton Vander Esch are fast. They hit like trucks. Maybe we try something else. In other words, maybe when you're running headfirst into a brick wall 19 times, you do not do it a 20th time. But they did, and then they kept right on doing it. And they didn't change until it was way too late. And situations like this, for the real truth, I usually turn to Cowboys defensive end DeMarcus Lawrence. He was the guy who called his shot before the win over New Orleans. He was dropping even more knowledge after Saturday's win also.
We ran a hit. You hit the wheel out of somebody. You hit the, power out of somebody. They ain't going to want to run no more. The first time we played him, I feel like he was running the ball harder, faster, stronger. And, we was laying that wood today. So, hats off to the defense for coming to play.
Hell yes. Hell yes. Hats off to the Cowboys defense for coming to play. And to Ezekiel Elliott, and to Dak Prescott, and Jason Garrett, and Rod Marinelli, because they flat out outplayed, outhit, outworked the Seahawks. And they survived that hideous injury to Allen Hurns. I mean, that was pretty disgusting. I'm not going to show that here. But sufficient to say, that's the kind of injury that can ruin a team for a game. How often do you see a team lose a teammate like that? And especially a teammate that well-liked. Everybody loves this guy. And then go out and lose that game because they're rattled. How often do you see that? The answer is a lot. But not Saturday. Not these Cowboys, man. They were tough. Tough. These guys had a losing record in November, and now they're a win away from the NFC title game. It's pretty impressive. You know what else is impressive? Holding Seattle to 2 of 13 on third down. Pete Carroll said after the game, that's what decided that game. And he's right. But he's also wrong. Because a way to get better on third down is to be a hell of a lot less predictable on first and second down. But they weren't. So yet again, let me go back to DeMarcus Lawrence for an explanation as to why Dallas was so good on third down. He said in a word, quote, intimidation. And then he added, quote, if you hit somebody in the mouth, they're going to look the other way. And I also feel like we were closing the pocket pretty well. End quote. So Dallas had a plan. Seattle didn't. They were predictable. Predictability is death in the NFL, especially in the playoffs. Predictability gets you beat. To quote my man Bill Cowher, strengths get you into the playoffs. Weaknesses get you out of the playoffs. And Seattle's weakness was their play calling. And it's certainly not the first time, is it? Wideout Doug Baldwin was asked after the game if he was pleased with the offense yesterday.
I don't know, to be honest with you. To be completely honest with you, we hear the play call, we run the play. We do your best with the play call that's given to you. So, in those moments, you don't think about it. You're just doing whatever you have to do to make that play successful. So I can't answer your question right now.
Yes, you can. You just did. and I can, and the answer is no. I know that's a punishing rushing game that has been Seattle's key, their calling card all year long, that they've got the best rushing offense in the league, and it's an amazing thing given what their offensive line has been like the last couple of years. I know it turned around their season. I know Carson had that monster game against Dallas earlier this season, but he wasn't having it on Saturday, and this is a different Dallas team now than it was then. They showed that on Saturday. Seattle never adjusted. Instead, they ran themselves into the playoffs, and then they ran themselves right out of the playoffs. And Dallas couldn't have been happier about that. And they had every right to be. And Seattle's got no reason, no excuse. What are you doing? You've been there before. You've got a quality quarterback in Russ Wilson. Man, put the ball in his hands. Put the game in his hands. What you're doing is not working. Why are you still doing it? What point are you trying to prove? Pete Carroll was asked about the game plan afterwards. Here's what he offered up.
It's really disappointing that we put out such a miserable first half of football. To be that far behind the sticks with penalties and all that in that kind of position, you know, it's really hard to play the ball. And so that's ridiculous. You know, they have to fix it. I held up with all the sticks over there and all that. It's really disappointing.
Isn't that what you expected from that guy? That's exactly, I knew he'd say that. And then when a reporter tried to follow up for clarification, Pete offered this. And then when the media flack said one last question for Pete Carroll, here's how he responded. When asked what he thought about Dallas' chances going forward, Carroll had this to say. When asked what he thought about Doug Baldwin's response to the question of what he thought about the offense, Pete had this to say. When asked if he could go back and do anything differently, what would it be? Carroll offered this. Anything else? Hey, Pete, you got a piece of gum I can bum off you? Trident or Dentine? How about bubble yum? ATP brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. You want to think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. You know, back in the day, Alvin, we used to have Pete on the show quite a bit. In fact, I want you to pull a soundbite from when he was with USC. When he was killing it with the Trojans, I remember asking Pete if he had any interest in returning to the NFL. This is what Pete said on this show back in the day. Dana Holgorsen is my guest. Dana, really nice to have you on the show. How are you?
I'm good, Jim. Appreciate you having me on. You doing good?
Yeah, I'm doing great. It's great to visit with you. I got to get caught up, though. So you were introduced last week. What have the first few days as Houston Cougars head coach been like? How's life for you these days, Dana?
Well, it's a little busy. I finished up the season in Orlando, you know, with the Mountaineers, and usually just stay there and kind of decompress for a few days after that's over. But things started getting kind of crazy and ended up over in Houston talking to a lot of the University of Houston brass, and we got a deal done. So I was excited about going back to the University of Houston and back to the city of Houston as well. That's kind of my second home, you know, so to speak. So the transition's been good. Anytime you switch jobs, it's tough, but because I know so many familiar people in Houston and at the University of Houston, it's been pretty smooth and pretty fun so far.
Dana, you know, you kind of touched on this, but the fact is you had a really good thing going on at West Virginia. You were having a lot of success, and I know you've been in Houston before, but you're not going to leave West Virginia for any old job. So aside from the fact that you've been there before, you've got some relationships already, what was the opportunity there in Houston that excited you the most?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, you know, I'm leaving the great state of West Virginia with my head held high. We you know, left the program better than when we got it, you know, transitioned them from the Big East to the Big 12, and we've had a whole lot of success and won a lot of games, you know. So really proud of what we did there, and West Virginia is always going to be, you know, dear to me, and met a lot of good people who I've developed lifelong relationships with, and we've talked, you know, about the student athletes that did such a great job, coached all kinds of really good players and really good people. So I'm very proud of that. But you're right. You know, it had to attack something special to for me to leave. And University of Houston is special to me. I think there's just a ton of potential there. They got great leadership. You know, Chancellor Couture is a rock star. She's been there 12 years and really got the University of Houston going in the right direction. You know, and Chairman Tillman Fertitta, don't need to tell anybody who he is and what he's done for the city of Houston. So, and Athletic Director Pesman as well. Those guys are rock star leaders, and the University of Houston has a ton of potential, and I know we got a lot of work to do, but we're going to get it where it needs to be here real quick.
Daniel Holgorsen joining us, the new head coach at Houston. So when you talk potential, having been at Houston and you had time at Texas Tech, you know what the potential in Texas is when it comes to talent. So what about potential? How special can the program be going forward?
Yeah, it's all about recruiting, which about, you know, I'm spending this week hiring coaches. I'm in San Antonio right now for the National Coaches, AFCA National Coaches Convention, and there's, you know, I got a bunch of job openings, and there's 10,000 guys here that are looking for a job, so that's kind of fun. But
what's that like?
Oh man, you gotta run through the lobby and get to your room real quick. So, but and there's so many good candidates out there, it makes it tough. But the state of Texas is the number one state in the whole United States that when it comes to high school football and high school players and high school coaches. So, you know, very, very familiar with the state and, you know, very familiar with the city of Houston. So I'll spend the next 3 weeks once we hire coaches and getting out all over the state, especially in the city of Houston, to recruit as many good players as we can. We don't have to go far. They've been good to me with budgets as far as being able to hire people, but the recruiting budget isn't going to have to be very high based on the fact that we don't really have to leave the city.
Yeah, that's nice. Listen, you were coaching in the Big 12, and now you go to a G5 school. When you look at the way college football is set up right now, do you feel like you've got a fair shot at winning a national title at a G5 school, or do you expect to see either Houston go to a bigger conference or maybe the expansion of a college football playoff?
Yeah, I don't think anybody knows the answers to that. I mean, you got a lot of answers, Jim, and I don't know if you have the answers to
even
what
I don't.
Well, when it comes to the college football, I mean, there's just so many unanswered questions right now. I think there's going to be a lot of things happen in the future, and we just have to position ourselves at the University of Houston to be as good and attractive as we possibly can, not only for the American Athletic Conference, which, you know, we refer to it as a Power Six conference, and then but what happens with the CFP as well? You know, it's tough, you know, for a group of five, as well as Central Florida has done in the last 2 years. It's tough to get into the top four now. We realize that, but I do think it's not done, and they're going to continue to talk about it, either expanding it to 8 or expanding it to 16. I think something's going to happen, which is going to, you know, allow somebody like Central Florida or the University of Houston to be able to get into that thing once we have one of these good seasons that we're going to have.
Dana Holgorsen joining us for a few more moments. You know, Dana, every single coach I have on the show these days talks about culture, the importance of developing the right culture, a winning culture. How would you describe the culture that you want in your football program?
Well, I think you know, just hard work and as gritty as you can possibly be. I think that fits the University of Houston. I tell you, I went to the basketball game last night, you know, Kelvin Sampson. I haven't really got to know him yet, but the way he coaches his guys, it's all about grit and it's about hard work and it's about playing hard for your city and about playing hard for your university. And I tell you, he's got those guys going in the right direction now. These guys are 15-0 and flying up and down the field and diving for loose balls and hitting the boards and having a lot of fun. And, you know, I mean, there's an electric atmosphere there, and you know, that's what we want to do within our football program, make it a fun atmosphere and an exciting brand of football to be able to go out there and win games, but do it the right way with a bunch of class, but play hard and get after it and do it for your city to win football games.
Yeah, I know Kelvin Sampson a little bit. You guys are going to get along just fine. He is a hard-nosed dude, really hard-nosed. and old they play. School. Yeah, no, he is old school.
What I love about Kelvin, about 2 minutes into it, the jacket comes off, and about 2 minutes more into it, the tie comes off.
Right.
He's a hard-working ball coach now.
Hey, so let me ask you this. When you look at the program right now, where it is, do you feel like you're rebuilding something, or do you feel like you're building on something?
Building on something. It's very similar to when I took over West Virginia. They had won, you know, 9 games 3 years in a row, coming off a couple of you know, BCS appearances in that decade. So winning tradition, and that's what the University of Houston has too. Now you're going to win 8 to 10 every year for what they've won. You know, they've been 10 wins in the last decade a couple of times, won a BCS game, a CFP game now, I guess, Big Six, and then but just average good wins. So that winning culture, they expect to win, they expect to be great. It's what Chancellor Couture has set for the whole entire university, and achieving that across the board. So just gotta work hard to get it to the next step, which, you know, that wasn't facing anything any different than what we did here the last 8 years at West Virginia. Gonna do the same thing at Houston.
All right, so finally you got a lot on your plate and you're focused on your thing, but what about tonight's game before I let you go? How about a quick thought or two? How do you think that's gonna play out? What do you expect to see this evening in Santa Clara?
I don't know what they played three out of the last 4 years. You know, so just exciting games now. I mean, both of them have kind of changed a little bit what they do, but Clemson has done a great job of getting better players in there, and two of the best teams in the country. They have been all year, and it's going to be exciting. I don't know, flip a coin and see who makes a play at the end, but nothing's more popular than what the CFP's got going on right now, and should be a lot of fun to watch.
Daniel Holgorsen's new head football coach at Houston. They named him last week, and he was the second winningest coach in West Virginia history. Daniel, great to have you back on. Thanks so much. Good luck to you.
Okay, thanks, Jim.
In Albuquerque. Well, that's kind of a quinky dink. Hey, Rex, hey, how Robbie, are you?
I'm great. This is why I eat molten chocolate lava cakes, because I'm in peak physical health, and I never miss a day of work. But what a performance by Nick Foles last night. While the senior writers will call in with their obvious and predictable takes, they don't provide the special insight that I do. The major comparison I draw is between Nick Foles and Frank Sinatra. Both show up huge when it matters, and both need specially constructed underwear to conceal their massive dong.
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Hey, listen, Rex, this show is still pretty aggressive. I still encourage you to be pretty aggressive. I still encourage you to push the envelope. There are other ways to say that this guy's got a brass set than that. There are other ways to talk about this guy's courage when it matters most. There's other ways to show up, to say this guy shows up big when it matters most, than to go to some Frank Sinatra analogy. We all see what you did there, Rex. Let's try Boise, Idaho. Terry, you made it in. Hi, Terry. How are you?
Thanks, Jim. Welcome. I am welcome to be in the jungle for the first time. Appreciate it.
That's not a good call. No.
No, you're not.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Good night now!